Hey there, I'm Wendy Vaughn, Sales Success Coach. Now, they call me the Queen of Predictable Sales Results. Well, because the easy formulas I share create sustainable, predictable results for my clients. And I am so glad that you've tuned in to today's episode of the Selling Made Easy Show, because this show is all about inspiration, not just in demystifying the client getting process known as sales, but also in peering through the lens of guest entrepreneurs who are blazing their own trails. And those trails have probably included a few unexpected roadblocks, maybe even having to overcome fears or blocks about selling. Now, I believe everyone has their zone of genius, their superpower that's a gift to others, including you. Now, for me, after 22 years of outperforming my peers in sales results, well, it's almost an X-ray vision that I have when it comes to finding and fixing any sales blind spots within entrepreneurs that are unknowingly causing clients to slip away. And with today's guest, his zone of genius is that he's always had a coaching mindset that enables him to tap into people's hearts and bring out their strengths and the talents that they've had within. So I am super excited to introduce James Mayhew. Now, James is an expert on organizational culture and values-based leadership. James was a chief culture officer for one of the fastest-growing privately held businesses in the country and successfully helped them become the number one workplace in Iowa while maintaining rapid growth. Now, James helps businesses be more profitable by energizing culture, reducing conflict, and maximizing how teams work together. Now, he also works with nonprofits and churches and serves on multiple nonprofit boards. Well, welcome, James. I am so excited to have you as my guest today.
Well, hi, Wendy. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on the show with you.
Yeah, and James, I just love how you're helping businesses thrive by helping their teams work better together. I can't wait to hear more about this and the work you're now doing.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's this is this I'm doing what I love to do. And when you can create a better synergy with the way teams are communicating and performing together, for me, there's no better feeling. So yeah, I'm excited to tell a little bit more about that with you.
Yeah, and it's such critical work because those workplace cultures can tend to be a little, well, they say toxic. So your work is so important. So, well, I'm curious here, James, exactly what was the inspiration or tipping point that prompted you to start your own leadership coaching practice?
This is a great question. I thank you for asking that because when you say tipping point, there was literally a tipping point. And so the company that they referred to in the introduction there, I had been with them for about 6 years. It was the greatest experience that I'd ever had professionally. And what we learned to do, built from the ground up, was to define and operationalize our culture. And we would consistently have guests coming through and businesses that would want a tour, and they'd hear about us and what we were doing, what was making us uniquely better. And I knew at that moment that the walls of that building weren't big enough for what I wanted to do. In other words, it wasn't a terrible thing that was happening. It was a very good thing, and it was awakening something inside of my heart that I wanted to go and be able to help other businesses do that. I was having some stresses there. I won't lie, that's a different story for another day. But there was a tipping point when my wife and I decided this is the time to do it. And we were traveling that day. We had a lot of windshield time. We were in the car together. And we just talked about what's the worst that can happen, what's the best that can happen. And there wasn't really a singular event that prompted it, but it was this pursuing of a calling that I felt led to.
Nice. Yeah, I love that, where you just really recognize this, this desire within yourself to take your expertise to a much broader level. I mean, obviously, you're extremely successful in the work you were doing within that corporation. My gosh, leading them to being, what was it, the number one workplace in Iowa? That's huge. And so you must have been highly coveted and honored within your position there at that company, but to have the courage to spread your wings and and decide to go make a bigger impact. It's really inspirational. So, well, how long have you had your own coaching practice, and has your business mission or vision evolved during that time?
Yeah, so I'm entering into the fifth year now of being on my own. When I left there, it did take me a little time, a little soul searching to make sure I was pursuing what I wanted to pursue. I just needed to really know in my heart that I could have the energy, the mental focus to pursue it. And so if the question is had the vision changed? I don't think the vision has changed, but there has been a significant evolution in the mission approach. And so when we first started, I was going to be more of a coach, and that evolved into being a little bit more of a consultant. And there is a big difference between those two mindsets. And where I'm at now is just really bringing those two together. So there are times when I'm hired to come into a business and share expertise. That's what a consultant does. And we're there to help, guide, teach, set them up for success. And then you get there's a stopping point you check out. Where I'm also been brought into businesses to coach, which is to mentor and to counsel and to be a sounding board, an advocate for a person, help them with accountability. And that is a different approach, but I'm just kind of putting the two together right now, and it is a blast. And so I truly do love what I get an opportunity to do on a daily basis.
Yeah, it is very interesting how, you know, when you're hired as a consultant, you're more of an advisor, and as a coach, you're a personal mentor or a team's mentor, typically an individual, but sometimes an entire team. Although the end result is still the same, to create that energized, positive work culture. It is interesting how you approach each one in a kind of a different vein. So, yeah, I love that. Well, have there been any big roadblocks or challenges that you've had to overcome along the way?
Yeah, I would say there have been. I mean, part of it is this: the word culture is misunderstood. That's been my number one, I think, awakening moment. And if I look back to how we began to use the word back when I was helping the business do that, we didn't really understand culture. But here it is. I'm going to lay it out this way. It's one word. The synonymous word to it, to me, is performance. I think culture is all about performance. How we do things around here, why we do it that way, and then it's an alignment of values. So when you think about roadblocks that I've had, that was the first one. Is just like, let's get on the same page about what we're actually talking about.
Right.
The second roadblock then is learning how to. So when I was doing it, when I owned the chief culture officer role, you know, people came to my office and I went to their workplaces, and it was an expectation. So starting out on my own, then I had to learn how to open those doors. I had to learn how to basically sell myself. And so that was the first significant challenge and roadblock that I had.
Yeah. Sometimes those words that are commonly used in our language become confusing within our own context of the work that we do. That frequently comes up and creates almost a block, like you said.
Well, and the challenge is this: a lot of people in the area that I'm serving would see cultural perks and benefits. And that's true. You know, perks and benefits make up a huge piece of culture. But it was also about, exactly, right? And so it would be misunderstood as fluffy, you know, and make people feel good kind of stuff. And I'm like, that's actually just a really tiny part of it. But what it really is how are you doing with giving feedback in your business? Do you do that well? Are you teaching people how to do that? And not only are you teaching them how to, And not only are you teaching them to like give it, are you ever teaching them how to receive it? So these are elements of culture when we're talking about how we communicate with each other, how we work together. And that's just one small example of getting through that barrier.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Well, and within corporations, there tends to be a lot of stress. And so that creates its own, you know, dynamic that kind of manifests into various different versions of teams not wanting to work together as well as they could. So yeah, like I said earlier, your work is so valuable. I had 6 years of experience within a corporation, and personally speaking, we needed you. So I'll just put it that way. But they didn't know about you or something, because it ended up being very toxic and I resigned, which I guess is a good thing because now I'm doing what I'm doing. So, but
and just to stay there for 1 second, because I think this is important, is understanding that a workplace culture, you're an example of it. When things go poorly, you lose your best and you keep your average or your worst people. Mm-hmm. Your best people won't tolerate it. And one of the barriers to that is reminding business owners and executives that your culture exists, whether you pay attention to it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to keep your best people, then you better pay attention to culture.
Yes, this is very true. Very true. Well, what have you overcome? I should rephrase this. What have you done to overcome the kind of misunderstanding of the word culture? Is that just part of your reach into corporations as to enlighten them as to how you do work with people? Or, you know, what has been a technique that you've used to really bring clarification into a common word that is commonly misunderstood in the context of your work?
It's making me chuckle because the word that's coming to mind is massive effort. I mean, here's the thing is I thought I knew it, and I did. I mean, we had success with it, so I did understand it. But when I'm talking about the massive effort, it is this ongoing and nonstop practice of refining the message. You know, I can talk about the what we do all the time. Mm-hmm. I can talk about the how we do it. But if I fail to get to the pain point that the executive or the business owner, the CEO is experiencing, then I'm failing. And that was the biggest thing that I've had to learn. And I'm still learning how to do that. And there's been times, you know, that I've had those self-doubts, such as, are you an imposter? Right? Because when business is slow and you're struggling to get an account, or you think you've made progress and they still say no, it's like, okay, what am I missing? What am I doing wrong? And all of the negative thoughts are there. You know, one of my StrengthsFinder themes is I have one called self-assurance, which is basically you have an inner confidence, but man, that can get rattled. And so learning how to overcome that and continuing to learn how to overcome that and recognizing that there are very few people that do what I do, very, very few. And I think it took about 7 people telling me that over and over, you know, just people that in my own inner circle, if you will, that would, instead of make me question myself, that would support me and encourage me and remind me, you got this. And because they would hear me talk about it passionately and they would say, you know, hear me talk about what I'm doing with a particular client that worked really well. And here's the outcome that we had. And they would smile and they would just say, what are you worried about? And again, I still struggle with that at times. It's something I'll always struggle with, I think.
Part of being an entrepreneur, this seems to go hand in hand for quite some time. I mean, you've been in business 5 years and that little gremlin still comes up, and it comes up a lot with regard to the whole sales process, because if prospective clients are saying no, it starts rattling your cage. You know, I have to help people with that all the time and just reevaluate. Okay, well, it's not them saying no to the work that you do. It's just, we need to refine how you're, like you said, your message and how to assure them that moving forward is for everyone's best interest. Yeah. So that Absolutely. Rattling the cage and just even, you know, even if we have this great confidence at certain times in reflecting on the work that we do, sometimes it needs buoying up. So yeah, it's great that you look to a support team. And, you know, speaking of sales here, which of course is my favorite topic, not that talking about my corporate role is favorite, but you know, you're obviously an expert at helping businesses to really create these positive, energizing work cultures that results in more success for everyone. But how do you feel about the client enrollment or the sales part of being in business? This is a very different skill set. Do you have any challenges or frustrations with this important part of growing your coaching practice and consulting work?
Well, yes. And I mean, to be flat out transparent here, it is the biggest barrier that I've had to fight through and continue to learn. And so when we're talking about, I'm just saying the sales process in general, one of the big challenges that I do have is I feel pretty good and confident when I'm speaking to a decision maker, whether that's a CEO or an HR person or the CFO, whoever it is, maybe the chief operations officer, because that's important too.
Right.
I feel pretty good when I'm in the room with them. I have a high degree of confidence, and I'm learning to get better about the discovery questions as part of my sales process, which is something I've just invested a lot of time and energy and money also into this year. So it's the discovery process and the clarification. I feel good about that piece now. When I think about the client enrollment or something like that, the big shift for me was just it's just a reminder that it's not about what I provide for them. What they are most concerned about is can I help them overcome their challenge? And so it's a service or a servant-based mindset now. I don't ever, I always believe this, people don't mind buying. People like to buy stuff. They just don't like to be sold to. So when we can figure out how to communicate what we do and the benefits of it and serve them, like I find that the most freeing part in this for me is being able to communicate what I do in a way where they say, you know, the client I'm sitting across them and they say, tell me more about that. And I know that I've hit something then at that point where this is a significant pain point for them. And I also never want to assume that I can help anyone and everyone. That would be completely irresponsible on my part. But I think in the early stages, you know, every client mattered, every dollar counted, and it's still important. I just don't ever want to be artificial in any way where I would take on work that I can't do or that I'm not really serving them in the best capacity. So there's a lot there, but I think if I could find a more consistent way of pipeline and then just the introduction, I feel pretty good about that. That's something I'm still needing coaching on and working through.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know if this is something that you struggle with, but it's called call avoidance, you know, where just in reaching out to a new prospective client is something that a lot of people who do B2B work, you know, B2B selling, they tend to do other things besides put out those calls or put out those reaches that will prompt that first meeting. So is this something that, you know, when you're speaking of that challenge or frustration, is this something that you're referencing?
Absolutely. Yeah, call avoidance is a real thing for me. I get sweaty hands, you know, and I can feel my pulse accelerate. And if there's something else that is seemingly important that I need to do, I oftentimes will do that. And that's a way, you know, that we can stay busy and avoid some of the more important stuff.
Right. Well,
But
that's our piece of
the
trying
part
to keep
that
us safe, you know, and keep us from, oh, here, James, let's take you over here. I'm sure there's something that needs to be done right now with the dogs.
And you know what? That's exactly right, Wendy. You're nailing it because, you know, working from home, like I'm in my home office right now, and it's not hard to go, yeah, I'm thirsty. I need to go grab a bottle of water. So I go and grab a bottle of water. And
Shuffle some papers and straighten this up.
exactly.
Well,
So yeah,
I'd
the
love
call
to.
avoidance is a real thing.
Well, I'd be happy to give you a technique here that might make that not so glaring for you and something that is easier to work around if you'd like.
Absolutely, bring it.
And like I referenced earlier, so I sat for 6 years within a corporate structure and was a sales producer, actually was extremely effective. But the same kind of thing, and I could hear it from the peers around me just not wanting to put out those calls. And that's really what generates the revenue and keeps your business going. So it's like, why? What is the missing link here? Because that's directly related to providing that service. But what I found and what I discovered for myself and what I've helped so many others overcome is that what occurs is we stop thinking about the person and the company really improving or becoming this better run corporation. we stop thinking about that and we just start thinking about, oh, what if I get somebody who doesn't want to connect me? What if I get somebody who, you know, hangs up on me? What if I get somebody? And you start thinking more about, you know, this micro focus of potential adversity, right? And again, it's our ego trying to keep us safe and avoid these situations. But when we focus on or remind ourselves of the outcome of the great work that we do and what has been the ripple effect, what, you know, just really take inventory of, you know, almost go into a, what I call a pre-calling reflection or meditation, if you will, or journaling, just to get reconnected with this great work that you do and the difference that it makes. You know, get grounded in that mindset instead of this kind of 30,000 foot view. Okay, now I've got to put out my calls and that activity of now I've got to do my emails. Now I've got to do my LinkedIn reach outs. So in that mindset, you're just focusing on the activity. What I recommend is focusing on the outcome of the great work that you do and the ripple effect. I mean, actually visualize, see those faces in your mind, that person smiling who you just referenced where the light bulb came on and they said, tell me more about that. And I mean, in the 5 years you've been working with corporations, with businesses, and seeing the team dynamics, seeing the culture become positive and people not going home crying, or people not going to alcohol on a Friday night because they are just, oh God, I got to get out of this. I, you know, give me a stiff drink, you know, where you have shifted this entire world for not only the individual, but the company and how they serve, you know, the magnitudes of people that that business serves. And so really just leaning into the great work that you do provide. And the other trick or technique, what I've recommended and I used to do all the time, is we have the LinkedIn profiles of the businesses, you know, the leaders that we've worked with. I pull them up, the people that we've worked with that are great clients that, you know, have had a positive, fulfilling experience with the work we've done. I just go through LinkedIn and like look at my contacts, look at my circle, and I pull those people up. And it reminds me of the people of, I reconnect with the people. This is what this is all about. It's not about calling an executive admin and getting the runaround. It's about working with people. And so just shifting your mindset in those two big ways, on the outcome of the work that you do and those friendly, happy people that you've had the pleasure of working with in the past. So I don't know. Does that help?
No, I think that's great. And what I wrote and circled and underlined was confidence. I think that comes back to what you were saying is like, let's review, understand how the work that I do makes a difference. I'm like most coaches where we really can get focused on the outcomes and you know, just the excitement of helping somebody else get where they want to go. If I remember that when I make a call or I'm about to sit down and do the calls, I think that's great stuff.
Yeah, it's again, it just sets the stage for this more positive desire to, hey, let me find some new people that are excited about really shifting their work culture. And they understand how valuable that is because they can retain their top performers. And, you know, they don't have to worry about the people working remotely doing their what they're supposed to be doing. And so it just works magic, really, to lean into that aspect. The work that you do. And speaking of that, you know, as I mentioned, the pandemic has created so much remote work for corporations, for businesses. I'm just curious, has that had any impact on the work that you do in helping businesses really create unity? Or, you know, can you just speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, something that came to mind is this. If 2020 has shown us anything, it is how vulnerable our businesses are to rapid and unexpected change. And so that has made a massive shift in culture. And so, you know, a lot of times when I'm working with a company and we're talking about inside, we're talking about micro shifts in culture. You know, let's focus on, you know, I referenced feedback before, so I'll bring that one back. You know, let's let's be more mindful about how we give and receive feedback here. And we start to break that down, talk about ways to do that. This is a macro shift. And so if you have people that, you know, are on a team and they're energized by being around others, they're, you know, extroverted, or that they get, they like to be in a room where they're bouncing ideas and there's that energy. A lot of places don't have that opportunity right now. And so I am actually, I've been hired a few times to come and do virtual presentations on some ideas. Like, how do we energize? I mean, okay, Matthew, you say you do energize culture. Like, well, we could use a shot in the arm here. One of the things that I find to be very valuable is just asking the question, are you checking in with your team? How often are you checking in? Well, I don't know that I want to check in quite as much as I don't want them to feel like I'm micromanaging them, et cetera. And I said, okay, here's one of the things that you can do as a shift in how I'm approaching this with my clients and how you can do this with your teams is, don't forget to be a human. And in fact, don't forget to be more human. The pandemic and virtual calls and all these things and all the separation has stripped away so much of that. So check-ins are so much more important now. And it doesn't have to be a check-in on, hey, I need a progress update today. If I was calling and you were on my team, Wendy, I might just check in with you by saying, how are you doing this week, Wendy? You know, do you have the tools and the resources that you need? Is there anything that's challenging you right now? Is it access to certain files? Are you having any trouble with, you know, our call system or anything like that?
Right.
So these check-ins, and then don't forget that person on the other end is dealing with uncertainty. So maybe a spouse is going through changes, or, you know, kids at home that are doing homeschool instead of being at school. Like, how does that impact you? Well, as a manager, as a leader, pay attention to that, you know? And so one of the things that I just started doing is I have clients that respond quickest or best. Their preference is by text. So on Monday mornings or Wednesday afternoons or whenever I feel inspired to do it, when they're on my mind, I'll just do a quick text. How's business going? Thinking of you today. And then I'll always close and I'll just remind them, you know, you can call me anytime. And I really, truly do mean that. I may not be able to take the call at that time, but I will as soon as I'm available. So whether that's through Messenger or LinkedIn or phone or text, whatever, I don't know, there's all these different ways that we can communicate with people. You know, stay top of mind, but don't forget that uncertainty on top of now at this time of the year when we're, you know, we're talking about pre-Christmas here, the stress of holidays and gatherings and election results and all of this stuff, people are really concerned. And so absolutely this stuff is impacting how I'm, you know, being more patient with clients. And at the same time, I'm not taking my foot off the gas on sales. And I'm not taking my foot off the gas on culture, because it's needed more now than ever. And I'm also not taking my foot off the gas on goals and expectations for not only my business, but the clients I'm serving. Mm-hmm. Because we can't duck our heads in the sand and hope that it just passes and everything's going to get back to normal. No, we're going to figure out, what do we need to do to evolve? What is the opportunity? What if we said we needed to grow by 10% in 2021 instead of just maintain? What would we do different? And so I think these are all just ways that has shifted how I'm doing my business.
Right. Yeah. Well, that is sound advice. And I just love how you really bring into the awareness of, you know, no, touching base is not necessarily perceived as micromanaging. No, it's people to people. People care. <Right. laughs> Well, so James, how do you work with business leaders who want to finally create that positive, energizing work culture for their employees? Can you share a little bit about your philosophy or your approach?
Yeah, sure. And I'll answer this from the wearing the hat of a consultant, Wendy. And it's a great question, because I had my eyes opened a few years ago when we were having consultants come in and who wanted to work with us, and they always focus on what's not going well. And I remember talking to them about, hey, what if we focused on what's going well? Because we've got some really cool things going over here. And anytime that if I'm working with a client, whether it is a one-on-one coaching, like executive coaching, or if we're actually working with a team or we're doing some sort of training, if I can find out what's going well, people like to talk about that. And it's different because they're, you know, they're kind of conditioned to talk about what's not going well.
It creates that energized culture. Wow.
It does. Yes, right. You just like, I'm instilling the mindset. Let's focus not on the problem, but what is going well. Mm-hmm. Actually, here's what you see is they become less defensive about talking about what's going wrong. Mm-hmm. If we just start there, mm-hmm. I get a lot of pushback.
Right.
Especially if it's senior leadership, executives will push back and say, well, it's not really that bad, or we don't really have an issue here. But if we focus on the things that are going well, it's very easy then for them to open the dialogue around saying, okay, we're actually struggling over here. We've got some turnover issues either on this team or in this department.
That is
struggling over here. Oh, okay. Well then, and then I turn that line over is like, okay, tell me more about that. What's going on there? And so I think that that's one of the most fundamental things that I enjoy about my job is just trying to, I don't ever want to approach the situation thinking I already know, because I do have a tendency to do this in my mind. I've already kind of got a thought here, but if I follow the process of asking the questions and doing the discovery, boy, sometimes I learned that I was way off, and then I wouldn't be serving them well. So I would say that's a really fundamental approach that I do.
Right. That is so powerful, because, you know, the thing that, well, what I've discovered is people act in predictable ways. And if, you know, the last thing people want to do who don't quite have trust or a full sense of what maybe the risks are in divulging some of the shortcomings is nobody wants to be perceived as a failure or not performing their job well enough. But if you shine light on all the things that are going well and all the successes that have been occurring, then it reassures and it makes people, you know, yes, so now you know I am doing well and things are going well. But there is this little bitty aspect that probably could be improved. So it is just human nature, and it's how one of those psychology things that's predictable. It's how people function, and especially within those corporate or business settings. So yeah, that's fantastic. Right. Well, how can listeners reach you if they're interested in learning more about working with you, James?
Yeah, there's two ways. Well, I'll give you a third one, and I'll start with the easy one first. I'm going to do this. I'm going to give my phone number out. Call me. Okay. It's 319-929-2604. I like to talk, you know, on the phone. Let's use it. Let's use that as an option. Okay. But if you want to be more passive about it, or if you want to just check out and learn more about the website, just go to my website. It's jamesmayhew.com. That's M-A-Y-H-E-W. And I'm also quite active on LinkedIn. I do a lot of what I consider long posts on there. So, you know, you're restricted to the 1300 character limit, but I really like to engage and get to know people on LinkedIn. And so if you look me up on LinkedIn, you'd want to put my middle initial into the search. So it's James R. Mayhew, and you'll find me that way. So outside of that's the three best ways to get in touch.
Okay, perfect. So the phone number again is 319-929-2604. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And website is jamesmayhew.com. Easy enough. That's great. James, J-A-M-E-S, Mayhew, M-A-Y-H-E-W. And you're also prolific and present on LinkedIn, which I love that. And James R. Mayhew. All right. Well, James, you've already shared so many golden nuggets of wisdom and insights here in terms of the impact of the work you're doing. But if I could tap on you one last time during our interview, in looking at your own experience in building your business, what's some advice that you can share with, say, a frustrated entrepreneur who's maybe questioning their decision to have started their own business, or they're doubting their ability to succeed?
Again, another question I really like that you're asking this. And here's the best advice that I discovered the hard way. Mm. Is treat your business like a business. Don't treat it like a hobby. Mm. And here, let me expound on that just a little bit. There's two pieces of that for me. When I first got into this, Wendy, I had a safety net. We were pulling from this covered my expenses, and I underestimated my drive and my ambition to sell. Like I was all about the content. I'm creating content. I'm creating all these things that I'm using now, but I wasn't going and selling. And watching that safety net, that bank account dwindle, like that was scary. And if you get frustrated that you're not doing, you're not getting the results that you want, I think the first thing you do is just ask yourself some hard questions by looking in the mirror and going, am I doing the most important things I need to be doing today? Or am I filling in time doing non-essential things? Mm-hmm. If I had somebody that would have held me accountable to that early, I would be further than I am now. I know that. I would have had less stress. I wanted to quit 1,000 times over these last 5 years. I promise you, that is not an exaggeration.
Wow.
There was at one point in 2018 where I just couldn't make a sale. I wasn't getting it done. And then I got scared. Wow. And money was low. I'm accountable to my wife who runs our home checkbook. And she says, can you put any money in this month? And I said, I can't. And she says, like, okay, well, we got to figure something out. You better figure it out, you know? And I love her because she's factual like that. And I started to get a resume together. Here's what I'm going to tell you. If you're in that spot, this is not advice. I'm just going to share with you what I did. That was such an awakening. I said, I will never allow myself to get back into that spot where I'm feeling dark. I'm feeling worthless. I'm feeling like those were real emotions that I was going through. And I'm somebody that has pretty high self-assurance. Mm-hmm. So I just had to face reality and I started to track more things and I started to be more serious about what I was doing. And I just would encourage you, you have to make the right decisions for you, but don't give up too early. Don't give up too early, because I do believe that one of the best things that we do is entrepreneurs, especially in the coaching area. I've seen a lot of people start and quit. And because they had a certain lifestyle that they were trying to maintain, and they were failing at bringing in the income to maintain that lifestyle. So they went back to work. My wife understands me, I think at times better than I understand myself. And she's like, you need to be doing what you're doing. The world needs it.
Right.
And man, I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
And so that was inspiring.
Right. Yeah, that's powerful. I love that. And just to really lean into treating your business like a business. And even though we have the luxuries of maybe choosing our own schedule and work, oh, I think I'm going to, you know, take an hour and a half lunch, or I think I'm going to go work out at the gym at this hour instead of doing it. We have luxury over our calendars and our schedule, but yet to really have that accountability set up somehow, somewhere, where we're treating our business as a business. So that, yeah, that is powerful. And it doesn't matter what our zone of genius and our core competency and the great work that we do, if we aren't getting clients, that's a big problem. So I love how you've really laid out the fact that it comes down to really overcoming a lot of those fears and mindset blocks and that kind of thing to lean into doing what you need to do. So that's powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that, James. That's
great. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
This has been so great hearing about your journey from your work as a very successful chief culture officer within a corporation, taking that corporation to whole new standards, to now this impactful work you're doing, helping lots of businesses become more profitable by energizing their work culture, reducing conflict, and maximizing how their teams work together. I really enjoyed our conversation. I want to thank you so much for being a guest on my show today.
Wendy, thank you. And thank you for the advice and the coaching and just the opportunity to share a story. I hope it inspires somebody.
Yes, absolutely. I know without a doubt, it's been very inspirational. So, and again, for our listeners, you can reach James Mayhew through either his phone number, which is 319-929-2604, or dive into his website there, jamesmayhew.com. And he's also present on LinkedIn. Through a search, you'll find his profile through James R. Mayhew. All right. Well, for all our listeners, remember, when it comes to building a business that brings you joy and has an endless flow of high-paying clients, Well, don't overlook the power of the optimized sales conversation, where you've triggered all four psychological states needed for your prospective clients to feel confident and excited about saying, yeah, this sounds great. What's next? So are you 100% confident that your sales conversations are optimized? Well, if you're curious, reach out to me and apply for a sales blind spot coaching session. You may be surprised by what we discover. All right. Well, this is Wendy Vaughn, Chief Paradigm Shifter and Sales Success Coach. And you can find me and our next podcast episode at predictablesalesresults.com. All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to today's episode with James Mayhew. And as always, here's to your success.